It's December the 2nd. We are continuing in Yechezkel, and we are up to we are up to Pasuk Yud Test 19. And we said there was one grammatical thing we wanted to discuss before going further. But essentially, all we've done so far is the Eastern Gate. Eastern entrance, I don't want to say gate, the eastern entranceway to the outer courtyard. Just this area here with the three ta'im, the three chambers on either side of the entranceway, the ulam, the hall over here, which was roofed, and the pillars, how high they were. We talked about the balcony going around the entire perimeter of the inside of the wall.
It went all the way around.
I don't know if it was in the back.
Okay, and you said it was separated only with the pillars from the way.
The pillars and these chambers here also. And anytime you got to something which would separate it,
right.
You know, it just stand on the other. What's that?
Will
this hook on my pocket? Yeah, but then my jacket gets stuck. My jacket's fine. Okay, there we go. Let's see if this works. Okay. Okay. You're right. So that's what we have. Now today we are going to be discussing the dimensions of the outer courtyard, and we're also going to move on to the north and south gates as well, not just the eastern one. But so we'll be getting to that. Before we do so, I want to just make a grammatical point, which will take us a few minutes, but it's worthwhile knowing this. It's worthwhile because it will give us an insight into other places where this tool is used, or this concept is used. Mrs. Quintal, can I trouble you for a chumash, please? One of the stone chumashim right behind you. Thank you. Now, thank you. What we saw last time at the end of Pasuk Yerches, at the end of 18, is that it says that. Well, let's read 18 again. V'haritzafah al kesef hashe'arim. And the ritzva, which means the pavement, which we said means the balcony, was the same height as the gates. The gates were 50 amos high, and we said that the balcony was also 50 amos above the ground. But is it l'umas orech ha'shorim, to the size of the length, which means the height of the gates? But now, is the balcony itself, as we pointed out last time, had some thickness to it. So what was 50 amos above the ground? Was it the top of the thickness of the balcony or the bottom of the thickness of the balcony? And it says, haritzafah ha-tachtona. It would be the bottom of the thickness of the balcony. So I don't know how thick the balcony was, but if the balcony itself was an amma thick, then you'd be standing actually 51 amos off the ground, because it's the bottom of the ritzafah, the bottom of the pavement that was 50 amos off the ground. Yeah.
One almost 2.5 feet?
It's between 1.5 and 2 feet.
So how many stories is that in our day?
What's
an actual story? 20 feet?
I don't know. I mean, 50 almost, we're talking between 75 and 100 feet off the ground.
That's
very high up.
That's very high.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just the gates we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't tell us how you get up to the balcony, by the way. There must have been steps somewhere to get up there.
Because it withstands the other
thing. Right. Either that, or maybe we're going to teleport. I don't know. Anyway. Now, the tool I want to point out to you is that the word hatachtona, now you realize, let's talk about emphasis. Most Hebrew words are emphasized what is called milra. Milra means at the end of the word, with the last syllable. So, for example, the word Torah, in Hebrew, the accurate pronunciation is not Torah. The accurate pronunciation is Torah. Torah. Or Torah. But it's emphasized at the end of the word. Torah. The other way it could be is Mil'el. Mil'el means the second to last syllable is emphasized. So in a two-syllable word, you only have two syllables to choose from. But you could have words, for instance, Laila. Laila, which means night, is not Laila. It's Laila. Because it's emphasized on the second to last syllable, which it's only a two-syllable word, so it's the first syllable. Laila. So that's the way Hebrew works, that the last syllable is emphasized, usually, and in some words, the second to last syllable is emphasized. Now this word, hatachtona, normally would be emphasized with the last syllable, hatachtona. Mm-hmm. Hatachtona would mean the bottom one. The bottom one. If it would be the bottom one, that would have implied that there are two balconies. Not one balcony, but two balconies. If it would be Haritzefa Hatachtona, that would imply that there are two balconies here. And this is a reference to the lower of the two balconies. Rashi points out that because the emphasis is not on the hay, rather it's on the second tuf, it's Hatachtona, then what that implies is that that hay is really an additional hay, and that therefore the intent is not that there is a bottom balcony, but it is the bottom of the one balcony. And Rashi derives this from the emphasis of the word. The fact that it's hatachtona and not hatachtona is how Rashi understands that we're talking about the bottom of the one balcony rather than the lower of the two balconies. That there are no two balconies. There's only one in the first place, and this is the bottom of the, that
how
balcony.
How do you know that the toe... Yeah. The emphasis is on the toe.
That Rashi, how do you know that the emphasis is on the tuf? So that we would know, usually the way you know, so what Chani is asking is, how do you know where the emphasis is? So normally you would know from the truf, from the cantillation. That's normally how you can tell. Not always. That's normally how you can tell. In this case, in my edition, the truf is actually, the cantillation is actually on the hay. On the nun, and you have that as well. Right. Rashi seems to feel that that is not... Rashi seems to feel that that's not accurate, that in fact the emphasis should really be on the second to last tuf. If you look at the next pasuk in Yud Tes, in verse 19, the fifth word is also hatachtona. There, the trup, the cantillation is actually on the tuf, at least in mine.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not sure if Rashi is simply disagreeing with what we have in front of us, that in his edition he would have put the cantillation, the trup, on the tuf and not on the nun, or some other reason. Remember that the trup, the cantillation, is like the vowels. You don't find it in the Torah scroll or in a scroll of prophets. If you open up a Torah scroll, you will see no vowels and no trup, no cantillation. That's all Torah Sheba'al Peh, that's all the oral Torah. So I don't know if Rashi has a disagreement over here. My main point is not to discuss whether Rashi's observation here is correct or not. We're certainly not going to take sides in what Rashi says. But I want to show you how to use this tool. You have a question?
I was wondering, because it starts the chapter 40, it starts in the 20th, 50th year of exile. And it was just a thought. Now, we're in the year now, in the Christian era, 2009. Is there anyone in our tradition that's been writing down and in the year, just like, they're writing about our exile? Is it in our tradition for people to write down, after the Beis Hamikdash, when the canon was closed, then other things happened? Is there anywhere in our Jewish tradition that we're actually keeping track of what's happened, who did it, what...
We generally count from the creation of the world.
No, I'm saying after all, all this, after the canon was closed.
They usually will count from the reigning king.
So after all,
The reigning secular king. The Persian king.
So are there books that, this is an accounting of what happened with Yehezkel. Is there an accounting of what happened, let's say, from the Christian era, 2000, and the Jewish...
Well, we have the Mishnayos and the Gemara. They're not written as a history, but there's plenty of information scattered throughout.
And the Gemara writes up until now?
No. The Gemara was sealed around the year 500.
So that's the end of our tradition?
No. Then we have other nobody. There is no official scribe.
Right.
Because there's no prophet. But we have mostly through the works of the responsa. That's how we can pick up what was going on when.
Responsa?
The when people had questions and wrote letters and answers. That's usually how you can
Rabbis?
Pick it up. Yeah. Yeah, without halachic matters.
The times?
Yeah.
And yeah. That's called a responsa?
That is generally what you call it, yeah.
Book or whatever, do we have it, the cantillation hit minute?
I don't know.
Did it go way back, or was it just...
Well, the cantillation goes back to Sinai, but the symbols don't necessarily go back that far.
Right.
The symbols are a, you know... There are different opinions about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's that?
We're given to Moshe.
Okay, but the two.
I can't say for a fact that our tunes are exactly the way Moshe sang it.
No, because they're different. I mean, the sign has two.
That doesn't prove anything. It could be there were several.
Oh. Okay.
Just like the pronunciation, it could be there were several.
That could have gone way back also.
Yeah, it could have been the 12 tribes each had their own style. At any rate. What I want to show you is that this observation of whether the word is emphasized on the last syllable or the second to last syllable can make a difference in what the word means. And I'm going to give you an example first with a hey, and then I'm going to give you an example with a vav, which is very relevant to Hanukkah, which is coming up very shortly. With a hey, you may be familiar with the system in the Torah that if you want to say that someone went somewhere, so how do you say, what's the Hebrew way of saying that you go to Eretz Yisrael? How do you say to, T-O, to Eretz Yisrael? You say L, and if you want to use one,
just a
lamin as a prefix, li Eretz Yisrael, right? If you say you're going li la aretz, I'm going to Eretz Yisrael. The lamin means to, T-O. Right. Now the other way to do it, which is not used in modern Hebrew, but is used in the Chumash, is rather than put a lamin in the beginning of the word, you put a hey at the end of the word. So instead of saying li Eretz Yisrael, you can say artsa Yisrael. Put a hey at the end of the word Eretz, and that also means to the land of Yisrael. You find that many times in the Chumash, Mitzrayimah means to Mitzrayim. Instead of li Mitzrayim, sometimes the Torah writes Mitzrayimah. Just put a hey on at the end of the, tack a hey at the end of the word. What's interesting to note is that in those cases, the word has to be pronounced on the second to last syllable. Because let's take the word Eretz and Artsa. The word actually, that's not the best example because that's anyway Milo. Let's take the word. Let me just think of a good one. Let's take the word.
Mitzrayim.
Well, that's also Milo. I'm trying to think of a word where anyway the emphasis is on the last letter. Let's take the word. Hold on.
Bayit.
Okay. Bayit is also the no. Safon. Okay, good. Safon. Safon means north. And if you want to say you're going to the north, you can say Safona, as we know, right? Yama, Vakedma, Safona, Vanegba. So if you want to say north, to the north, you can say Safona instead of Lit Safon. Safona. You put a hey at the end of the word Safon. Now, in that case, you would not say Safona. You would say Safona. Mm-hmm. You won't say Safona. Why don't you say tsafona? Because the word is tsafon.
Right.
The hey is being tacked on to teach us that it means to the north. So it's tsafona. Tsafona would be incorrect. This is relevant, and I'm going to tell you one example over here. In the Chumash, in Parshas Ekev, let me locate it here quickly, but in Parshas Ekev, there's a word where one could make a mistake in its pronunciation, and if the one who was reading from the Torah would do this, we would have to send him back because it would be considered a mistake. The Torah writes, I want to tell you the address. That's why I'm trying to find it. But the Torah writes, I'll tell you the pasuk as I'm looking. The Torah writes, it says Uvnei Yisrael. Nasumi mi Beiros b'nei Akan. The Jews traveled from the place called Beiros b'nei Akan, and they traveled Mosera. They traveled, and then it tells you Mosera. Now one might be tempted to say that means to, Mosera ends in a hey, to the place called Moser. Mosera. To Moser. But that's incorrect, because if that's what the Torah meant, it should have said Mosera. Not Mosera. It should have said Mosera, which would mean to Moser. But it doesn't say that. It says Mosera. Which means the Torah just left out the prefix le. It's just understood. They traveled from Be'eros Bnei Akan. And where do they travel to? They travel to a place called Mosera. The hey is part of the word. The hey over there does not mean to Moser. Rather, it is part of the name of the place, Mosera. I'll find you the address in a moment. If someone reading from the Torah would say Mosera, we would have to correct him. Just as we would have to correct him if he would pronounce the word wrong by putting in different vowels, we have to correct him. If he would hear, if he would emphasize the wrong syllable in this case, we would have to, do you see it just sitting over there? Look at that. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's in Perek Yud, it's in Dvarim, in Deuteronomy. It's in Perek Yud, chapter 10, and it's Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So you just knew it before I opened it. Right.
Okay.
So because it says Mosera, that's how we know that the word is actually Mosera and not to Moser, which would have been Mosera. And if you look in the Targum of Unklus, the translation of Unklus, the Aramaic translation, he supports this where he writes Mosera. He doesn't say to Moser. He says le Mosera, to Mosera. That's how you see it. Now, this is a fairly technical point, but I'm bringing it up for a reason, because it's very relevant to Hanukkah. I try to remember in Shul to announce this at some point in the early stages of Hanukkah, so that I don't have to constantly tell the Bal Tefillah, the Chazan, to go back. And that is that in the Al Hanisim for Hanukkah, one of the things that we say in the Al Hanisim is that I have it here also. Oh, yeah, okay. Thank you. One of the things we say in the Al Hanisim of Hanukkah is, of course, we go through the whole story and how it was Rabim Biyad Ma'atim, many in the hands of the few, etc., etc., etc. And then we say the Achar Canon afterwards, after the war was over and we won the war, we say, Ba'u Vanecha Livir Be'secha, your children came to your home, to the Beis HaMikdash, to the temple. And then it says, "Ufinu es heichalecha," and they emptied out your sanctuary, which means they emptied it from all the impurities that the Hellenists had brought in. They removed all the impurities. They cleaned it up. That's what they did. That's what it means. "Ufinu es heichalecha." One has to be careful to say Ufinu eseichalecha, which means then they emptied. Ufinu means then they emptied. If one would say Ufinu, rather than Ufinu, you'd say Ufinu. Well, Pinu means our mouths. Pinu means Peh Shelanu, Pinu, our mouths. As we say in Nishmas Kol Chai, we say, Ilufinu male shira kayam. If our mouths were filled with song like the ocean, ilufinu. There it's finu, not finu, because finu means empty. To empty. Finu means our mouths. So here's another example of a difference when you emphasize the wrong syllable. It's often, not always, but it's often important to make sure to emphasize the correct syllable, because it can change the meaning of what you're saying. So with Hanukkah, it's very common, because I didn't say this before, but what happens is that although in Hebrew most words are mil ra, the emphasis is on the last syllable, in English most words are emphasized on the second to last syllable. It's the dialect that we have. But that's the way that we speak. And that's one of the challenges for an American making aliyah to try to sound like an Israeli. It's not just getting the resh straight. It's not just that. It's also because we're not used to emphasizing the last syllable. And so the words come out funny. We say Torah when they would say Torah or Torah. So it sounds, the whole thing is a change. It's a change in how you emphasize your words. So it's very common when an American is davening to emphasize the second to last syllable, which is incorrect. Now, it doesn't always change the meaning. But in Chanukah, in the Al Hanisim, it does on this word, Ufinu Esechalecha. So one has to be careful not to say, V'acha kein ba'u v'anecha v'ibibesecha ufinu esechalecha, which is very common that someone will do. It has to say, ufinu esechalecha. That's just another example where you find this idea of changing the meaning of the word.
If you listen that closely, like, it talks so fast. Is it correct in there? I mean, the southerners tend to leave off the end of some of these NGs and stuff. Does that not happen in Hebrew also, in Israel?
I can't tell you how people speak, but the whole language works differently. Not the tone of the language, but the... Yeah, the inflection, but it's more that every language has its melody. There's a melody to any language. You can tell sometimes what language a person is speaking without actually hearing the words, just because they have there's a certain melody to the language.
I understand that.
And in Hebrew, the melody is on the it's one of the ways is that it's on the last syllable. That's the way it's done, and you can feel it when the person is speaking. It's just that it has a different feel when the words come out. Then that's something which is hard to get used to for an American.
We spend a lot of time in this. What was so essential about this? I'm a little perplexed. Why was it so important that we get this pronunciation of the second to last, the last,
and what? So I'm trying to show you a case where the meaning of the word actually changes
right.
If you emphasize it incorrectly.
But you started out with the balconies. That's why you.
Yeah. You wonder how it tied into Yechezkel because of the.
I'm just wondering why was it so important.
Since we had an example here in Yechezkel, I used it.
Okay.
But I think it is relevant to a lot of those people. So. Okay. Now. Moving on in Yechezkel, starting now with Pasuk Yutes, verse 19. Vayomad rochav milifnei hashara tachtona, and he measured the width in front of the bottom gate. Here the bottom gate means the gate that is further out, further away from the center of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the gate we were just talking about, the bottom eastern gate. Bifnei HaChatzer HaPnimi, in front of the inner courtyard, Michutz Me'a Amma, from outside 100 Amos, HaKadim BeHatzafon, the east and the north. So what he just said is that he measured, the Malach, the angel, measured for Yechezkel, the area that is in front of the eastern gate, the outer courtyard, which is not the inner courtyard, but he measured 100 amos from wall to wall, not including the part that juts into the wall, not including here the hall that juts into the wall, and not including the gate structure here that juts into the chatzer, into the courtyard. So from wall to wall is 100 amos, and here for the first time, he moves on to a different direction besides the east. He says not only was it 100 amos from wall to wall in the eastern outer courtyard, but also in the northern outer courtyard.
So which walls were breached in the festive
period? None were breached. This wasn't built yet.
I mean, in the second temple. In the second temple, which has, I'm sure it's sort of similar.
Well, it's very, you can't really bring it from here. It's not exactly the same thing, but the outer walls were breached. Not on Sarbat Tevis, on Shiva Sarbat Thomas.
Somewhat of the second temple.
What's that? A little bit. We discussed that a little bit last time. A little bit. From the inside of this wall to the outside of this wall.
And what would you call that wall, the inner one?
This would be the wall of the inner courtyard, of the Chatzer HaPnimis. Right, so it was 100 amos from wall to wall. That 100 amos of walking space.
Okay, I'm not sure it looks like the northern and southern are the same size. Is that what we're going
to
get?
No, it is the same size, but he hasn't gotten to the southern yet.
Why didn't he do it all at the same time?
Good question. No, so let's develop it first. Well, let's see where he goes first. Then we're gonna get to. Okay. So we have the east and the north. Then pasuk chav verse 20. V'hashar asher panav derech hatzafon, and the entranceway which was facing towards the north. So now that we're on the north side, now we're going to talk about the entranceway of the north side. Lechatzer achitzona, that enters into the outer courtyard. Madad arkov v'rachbo, we measure its length and its width. So now that we've moved from the east, ostensibly he's gone this way to the north, and measured 100 amos this way, now he's going to talk about this entrance complex, which, as we're going to see, is nearly identical to the east one. Not 100%, it's almost 100%. 99%, it's going to be identical, as we're about to see. So, he writes, Chafal 21, Visa'av, its chambers, Shlosha mipo, Shlosha mipo, three to this side and three to that side, exactly like on the eastern side. Ve'elav, ve'elamav, haya, and its trees, which are those columns, those pillars, and its hall, were kemidas hashar harishon, like the same measurements as the first entranceway, meaning the eastern entranceway. Chamishim amah arko, 50 amos was its length, which means its height. Verochav, and its width, chamesh vesrim bo amah, 25 amos. That would be the measurement, just like we saw with the eastern gate. That is the measurement from 25 amos, is the measurement from the edge of this wall to the edge of this wall. 25 amos. From here until here. The wall to wall. Also, as we saw last time, that corresponds to 25 amos from this wall of the first chamber to this wall of the first chamber. Because this lines up perfectly. From here to here is a perfect line. So it's 25 amos from here to here, 25 amos from here to here. Same thing as with the eastern gate. Chaf Beis 22, V'chalonav, and its windows, V'elamav, and again its trees, its columns, V'simorav, and its dates. Because remember, we said that the top of the columns, those 60 amma columns, the top was decorated as a palm tree. Kemidas Hashar was the same measurement as the other gate. Asher Panav Derech HaKadim, that was facing towards the east. Uvemalos Sheva, and with seven steps, Yalu Vo, you go up to it, Ve'lamav Lifnehem, and its hall in front of them. So the only difference between this gate, this entranceway, and the eastern entranceway, is that there were only seven steps. Here, you had seven steps at the entranceway before you got to the hall. Where on the eastern gate, the Yecheskel didn't tell us, but Rashi told us there were 12 steps to get up. So there was a little bit fewer steps on the northern side than there was on the eastern side. Other than that, it is identical, at least according to the information we have here. Chaf Gimel 23, V'shar lechatzer ha'pnimi negen hashar latzafon v'lakadim. Now we move on to a new thing. The gate to get into the inner courtyard was opposite the gate, both on the north and on the east. Fayaman mishar el shar mea ama, and he measured from gate to gate 100 amos. So here he tells us now that the entranceway to get into the inner courtyard, both on the north and on the east, was directly in front of the entranceway to get into the outer courtyard. It was a straight line. If you walked straight from outside the complex into the outer courtyard, you kept on walking, you would then enter the gateway to get into the inner courtyard, both on the north side and on the east side. And he reiterates that it's 100 amos from gate to gate. Gate to gate means from wall to wall, just like over here, it's from wall to wall, which means that if I'm going from here, this is the gate, is right here, this is where the gate was, until I got to this gate, actually to here, I believe, this gate, it would be 100 amos. So he reiterates that point. Now, after describing the east, then moving to the north, and every time he talks about the north, he includes a description of the east again. He keeps on comparing the north to the east. Then we get to the south. Chaf Dalet 24. Vayolicheni derech hadarom, and he took me towards the south. Vine shar derech hadarom, behold, there was a gate on the southern side. Umadad elav ve'ilamav kamidos ha'ela, and he measured its pillars and its hall like these measurements. Vechalonim lo, and it had windows. Ule'ilamav, and also there were also windows to its hall. Saviv saviv, all around. Ke'achalonos ha'ela, like these windows. Chamishim ama orech, the length was 50 amos, which means it was 50 amos tall. Verochav chamesh ve'esrim ama, and its width was 25 amos. Umalos shiva olosav, and there were 7 steps to get up it, to go up onto the southern gateway. Again, that's like the northern one, unlike the eastern one, which had 12 steps. Ve'ilamav lifnehem, and its hall was in front of the steps. Ve'simorim lo, and it had the palm tree decoration. Echad mipo ve'echad mipo, one on this side, one on that side. El elav, to its pillars. Vishar lechatzer ha'pnimi derech ha'darom, and it was also a gateway on the southern side to get into the inner courtyard. Vayamad mishar el hashar derech ha'darom mea amos, and he measured from gate to gate on the southern side 100 amos. So just as on the north and on the east, there was a gate facing, a gate into the inner courtyard, which was facing the gate into the outer courtyard. You have it this way here also, not just in the east and north side, but also on the southern side, the same thing, and it was 100 amos from one to the other. So now we have the description, now we know, until now we did not know, that there were 3 entranceways into the outer courtyard, on the east, on the north, and on the south, and now we know there are 3 entranceways into the inner courtyard from the order to actually set it is from the north and the east and the south. That we have, now we have established that. We have no information yet about what these entranceways to the inner courtyard looked like, other than they corresponded to the outer ones. Mm-hmm. That's all we know so far. Yeah.
Just like Torah, where there's not much to work.
You can't say it's like Torah, but there are no extra words.
So why is he giving us all this detail? I'm just saying it's a mirror image of the northern courtyard.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. There has to be an answer, but I don't know the answer.
But he's also describing it differently, mm-hmm. a different order than he described.
Mm-hmm. Every detail is going to matter, but I don't know all the answers. I know very few answers. But all the details are going to matter. You can't say it's like Torah because it's not a nevuah of Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is on a higher level, which means that there will be more depth in Moshe's prophecy than in Yechezkel's prophecy. But the simple fact that there are no extra words, it doesn't take much depth for that to be true. That's true irrespective of Moshe or Yechezkel. But when you get into the thousands and thousands of nuances in each and every letter, there you're going to have much more in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy than you're going to have in Yechezkel's prophecy.
We have the same thing that a Pikulmatria is the same for 2 words and 2 different prophets, if there's a connection, or you can't
know. No, it could be, it's true, but gematrias are tricky because sometimes they're true, sometimes there is a connection, sometimes there isn't, and you can't always know. But it will matter. Yeah.
Why do we have an angel measuring? Why isn't Yehezkel measuring?
He doesn't know about it. I mean, he's being shown around.
Oh, so he's being kind of introduced.
Right.
You see, this is the way it looks.
Right. That's right.
And he's being shown in a vision.
Yeah.
Now, is this the same stick? Because there were 2 sticks at the beginning.
No stick was mentioned over here. The stick will be brought up later, but has not been brought up now.
So we don't know what stick's being used tonight.
Right. Okay. That's right.
So is there a hint of a time period in this, or was it just 6,000 years, or we do right now?
Of when it will happen? No, there's no hint.
There's no hint.
No, not here. Oh, I don't know. I can't say nowhere. There's no overt hint. Doesn't say anything.
It's probably in there, but we'll have to look back to it.
Oh,
you can be sure that we're not... It's the third, yeah. You can be sure that if there's a hint, we're not going to find it. Right.
No? First, second, third are all different.
Yeah. Similar, but not the same.
Does he even know how long he tried to build this? But he says maybe God will just place it
down. Yeah, doesn't tell us. Doesn't tell. Chav Ches 28. Now he finally gets into the inner courtyard. He's always been in the outer courtyard. And now he says, and he brought me into the inner courtyard through the southern gate. So the gate which was the last one to get to when talking about the outer gate, getting into the outer courtyard, that's the gate that he's actually brought through to finally get into the inner courtyard. Pardon me. Vayomares Hashar Hadaromi measured the southern gate, Kamidos Ha'elad, like these measurements. So what we're going to find is, and it's going to be a lot of words, and Mrs. Lewis is not going to like this, but there's going to be a lot of words that are going to be the same. But we're going to find, as you can see on the drawing, that the gates to get into the inner courtyard are almost mirror images of the gates that got us into the outer courtyard. Not exactly. One obvious difference is that it is a mirror image. It is not. They reflect each other, which means whereas to get into the outer courtyard, you started with the, well, before, with, not including the steps, before you get to the steps, you started with this kind of entryway without any gates, and you had the chambers running off of them. Then you came to the hall with gates and on either side and pillars. When you're going into the inner courtyard, you start with the pillars and the hall and the gates, and then you move on to an entryway, finally getting into the inner courtyard.
The stairs don't match up.
The stairs don't match up, correct. The stairs don't. The stairs over here are earlier, and here they're closer to the hall itself. Right, that is true. But then you find that on all three sides, you have that mirror image. That's one difference, that it's a mirror image. It's not a repeat. It's not a replica. It's a mirror image. That's
number one.
Here, a replica would be take here. Look, this is shaped like an eye with a thing sticking out of the middle.
Yeah.
Right. A replica would be take this whole thing and put it over here, which would be an eye with a thing sticking in this direction.
Oh, I see.
But instead, it's going the other way. It got flipped over. Right here, and then you flip it over. That's a mirror image.
Okay.
The other difference, as we will see, is that the inner courtyard had additional chambers built into the walls. You can see, I'll use the eastern one to show you, you can see how there's this inner chamber built into the wall itself, whereas if you look at the same place on the outer courtyard, which would be here, which would be, one second, which would be, it's hard to tell where it would be, well, pick wherever you want, either here or here, you don't have that. You don't have that built-in chambers into the wall itself. And that you do have on the inner courtyard. So that's one. That's another difference between the two. But Yechezkel will describe it to us. So he writes in Chavkes. So he said, again, the last two words of Pasuk Chavkes of 28 are Kamidos Ha'ela, the same measurements. Chavkes 29, Visa'av, its chambers, Ve'elav, and its pillars, Ve'elamav, and its halls, right, thank you. Kamidos Ha'ela, like these measurements. V'chalonos lo, and it had windows. Ule'elamav, and to its halls, saviv, all around. Chamishim ama orech, it was 50 amos long, which means high. V'rochav, and its width. Esrim v'chamesh amos, 25 amos. Ve'elamos, saviv, and its halls all around. Orech chamesh v'esrim amos, were 25 amos long. V'rochav chamesh amos, and its width, 5 amos. Now here, this is where you get those extra chambers. See, when it says here in Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, and its halls all around were 25 amos by 5 amos, that is a reference to the actual chambers that we just mentioned. Just give me one moment, I'm just reviewing the Rashi here. Yeah. Rashi struggles with where they were. Our drawing puts them where Rashi puts them, but it is not so clear from the verses where these extra chambers are. He's describing right now these extra chambers that I just pointed out to you. These extra chambers, these on the south side, these extra chambers, but Yechezkel doesn't tell us where exactly those chambers are. He just says all around. And it's 25 amos long by 5 amos wide. Rashi, by process of elimination, puts them in the wall itself. Because Rashi says it can't be that they would, for instance, be lengthwise jutting out in this direction, because that would significantly cut down your space of the outer courtyard. And that's why Rashi insists that they must be here. Now, other mafarshim, other commentaries may say differently. One of the drawbacks of a drawing is that we start to think that this is the end-all and be-all of what it's going to look like, when in fact there is a lot of machlokas, there's a lot of debate of what the verses actually mean. The same goes for the second Beis HaMikdash, which we have a picture of as well, which you saw in the summer, you just showed right now, which that picture is accurate according to some explanations. Now, none of the different commentaries are going to say anything radically different. We've got a general picture in both pictures, but we have to bear in mind that they're not necessarily exactly the same. And since the third Beis HaMikdash hasn't happened yet, that's going to leave the most room for interpretation. So, but then again, we will find out eventually.
Right. I hope so. Going back to the original three chambers, they have like the hallway you have to go. Okay, how long are they? Because they look like they were longer than 25 amos, because there's inner chambers.
They're 5 amos long, okay. And then the walls between them are 5 amos. So it's 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. So that's why the combination of the whole thing, right, from this wall to this wall, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. Actually, just one moment. No, I'm sorry, that's not true. There's 6, I believe, right? There's 6, 5, 6, 5, and 6. The walls are 5 amos thick. The chambers themselves are 6 amos, if I remember correctly.
28 versus the 25. So
right. So it's a slightly wider. So this is 25 amos from wall to wall, and this is 28 amos from wall to wall. So you end up with 1.5 amos here and here, jutting out beyond. That's what you meant?
Yeah, that explains the difference.
Right. Okay.
So those additional chambers are large. In other words,
they're very large. Yeah, 25 amos is a big chamber.
The other ones.
Yeah, they're big chambers.
Is that bigger than this one?
25 amos is between 37.5 and 50 feet. So it's certainly, that's.
Well, I was counting, it's probably 10, 25 is like around.
These from
so that's around 25 feet.
From you to me is 16 feet.
Right.
These tables are 8-foot tables.
16 feet. So
would
be double.
Say more than double. More than double. Yeah. Okay.
Aren't these tiles like 18 inches?
I don't know.
So
I don't know.
50 might be about the whole.
The 30, I would imagine. Yeah. Well, you know, the double room together, maybe more, but something like that. Okay. Lamed Aleph 31, the Elamav and its hall or halls, El Chatzer Achitzona, faced the outer courtyard. Here's where you see that it's a mirror image. The hall was not in to the inner courtyard, rather it jutted out towards the outer courtyard. The Simorim El Elav and its palm tree decoration was on its pole, on its pillars. Umalos shmone ma'alav, and here you had 8 steps, whereas you had 7 steps on the outer courtyard gate. To get to the inner courtyard, it was 8 steps. Now that he's described the southern entrance to the inner courtyard, now we move around. Now he brought me into the inner courtyard coming from the east. Vayamar es hashar, and he measured the gate, kamidos ha'ela, like these measurements. Visa'av, ve'elav, ve'elamav, kamidos ha'ela, and its chambers, and its pillars, and its halls are like these measurements. Ve'chalonos, lo, and it had windows. Ule'elamav, and to its halls, saviv, saviv, all around. Orech kamishim ama, its length was 50 amos, which means 50 amos high. Ve'rochav chamesh ve'esrim ama, and its width was 25 amos. Ve'elamav, lechatzer achitzona, and its hall was towards the outer chamber, the outer courtyard, right, jutting into the outer courtyard. V'simorim elei lav mipo umipo, and its palm tree decoration on its pillars on this side and on that side. U'shmonem alos ma'alav, and its steps were 8 steps. So here, the eastern gate to the inner courtyard had the same amount of steps as the southern gate to the inner courtyard. Vayivieni el shar hatzafon, and he brought me to the northern gate. Umadad kamidos ha'el, and he measured like these measurements. Ta'av, elav, ve'lamav, its chambers, its pillars, its halls, v'chalonos lo, saviv, saviv, and its windows to it around. Orech kamishim amot, length 50 amos, v'rochav chamesh v'esrim amot, and its width 25 amos. Ve'lav lechatzer achitzona, and its halls were towards the outer courtyard, jutting into the outer courtyard. V'simonim el elav mipo mipo, and its palm tree decoration on its pillars from this side and that side. U'shmoneh ma'alos ma'alav, and its steps were 8 steps. Okay, till there. Now, starting from Lamech from 38, we're going to get into new information, and that we will leave for next week, while for the bulk of the time now, the balance of the time now, I should say, we are going to discuss how come the directions are introduced the way they're introduced. So let's repeat what happened over here and show how it was told to us. We had, since really all 6 of these entranceways are essentially the same, with very slight differences, the amount of steps, for example, these other chambers, the fact that it's a mirror image, but it's essentially the same. Obviously, the most detail you're going to give to the first one you describe, because everything else is going to build on that one. So, we got a nice detailed description of the eastern outer entranceway. We'll call this the outer entranceway, the inner entranceway. The eastern outer entranceway, we got a nice description of. Then Yechezkel went on to the northern outer entranceway. Then, he mentioned that there were inner entranceways, but he didn't talk about them. And he just talked about the size of the courtyard, 100 amos long. By the way, he never mentioned that it's, what's the dimensions in the other way? He only mentioned from wall to wall, from wall to wall, from wall to wall, not talking about the other direction of the outer courtyard. We'll get to that later. But at any rate, so he talked about the eastern outer entranceway, the northern outer entranceway. Then he swung around to the southern outer entranceway, then moved on to the southern inner entranceway, and then came back the other way. The eastern inner entranceway, the northern inner entranceway. And now he's going to move on to other things. So what is the... It seems funny, you would think it should be consistent. It should be symmetrical. Whatever, it's really 2 questions, which is, why start with the east, move to the north, and then go to the south? And then, if you're going to talk about the inner entranceway, at least follow the same pattern. Either go, again, east, north, south, the same way you did the first time, or go backwards. You went east, north, south, so now, go south, north, east. Right? But he doesn't do that either. He goes east, north, south, and then he goes south, east, north. It seems like there's no pattern. It seems very funny. Why introduce it that way?
When people would come and give their karbanos, which way would they come in? I mean, is that the direction that they would flow?
I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer, although he did tell us in the beginning. It's funny, we're all talking about this in the past tense, yes. Right? but what will we do? That's the question.
What did the custom do?
Well, Yechezkel wasn't bringing a karban. He was being shown, right?
I'm saying that, like, when you said that the women had a gate open for them, which gate was it that would be open for them during the year?
I don't know. I don't know. In the third base, I'm not sure I know what's going on.
In the second.
You were saying there is no pattern to it, but in my mind, there was a pattern.
Okay, okay. I want to hear it. Let me just make one observation before I hear it. And that is that the all the way back in Pasuk Beis in verse 2, it says there was a large mountain and the city was to the south of the mountain. It seems like the city of Yerushalayim was more to the south of the Beis HaMikdash. So that means that the people resided primarily over here. But that doesn't prove that that's the way they would come. It could be that the configuration of the mountain lent itself to coming in from the east more easily than from the south. I don't know for sure.
That's the direction of Har HaZeitim. And if they're going to be revived in coming, that's exactly the closest one that they come to.
It could be, but remember there's going to be some geographical changes, geological changes, topographical changes.
Right now, Har HaZeitim is at the
south. Right, but there's going to be some changes as things happen with Gog and Magog and all that. So we don't know exactly how things are going to happen. Well, what do you think the pattern is?
Well, the eastern gate would be first, because that's the one where the gate was lower, because the priest had to be able to see through or something, so the height was a little different than the others. And then I would almost think that it wouldn't make that much difference. I don't know whether you go to the north or south.
Okay.
To the north.
Okay.
And then to the south. And then I picture really traveling, you know, taking a trip, a tour. So as long as you're at the south for the outer, then the first one of the inner that you come to is the...
Okay.
Is the
so what you're suggesting is...
I'm picturing really traveling
right.
through.
So what you're suggesting is that the east, really the question is why start with the east? That's really the question. Once you start with the east, you got to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
And whichever way you're going to go, in this case he happened to choose the north first, then you got to go to the south. And once you're in the south, then you go back, but go now in order. South, east, and then north. If you would have gone from east to south, from east to south, then we would have jumped around to the north, and then go north, east, and south. That's what you're saying. Okay, that's a valid point. Then the only question is why pick the east first, and you're answering because it was a lower wall. Okay. Yeah. So
that's like the most respectful place.
Right. Okay. So that would be another reason because it's there and it's there. It's the front door. Right. So you start from the front door, even in Atlanta, right? You still better start in the front door when you're showing
it. Never to the Kodesh Kodeshim.
What's that?
That way your back is never to the Kodesh Kodeshim.
Okay. Okay.
Of the veil because you're facing the Kodesh Kodeshim when you come in there.
Okay, so it just makes sense to start with the middle. Well, none of us had a question, really, why start with the middle. I mean, all of us, I think we would have...
We had more steps
before you get tired out. No, but I think we would all intuitively have started with the middle. That just makes sense. Now, you've got to move to one or the other. So he chose the north, and then back to the south, and then back the other way. So then the question really is, let's say this is true. So you come in the east, why move to the north? And rather than move to the south. You can go either way. It's a 50-50 chance.
It's on your right.
Okay, no, that's not so bad. Because we know that you're supposed to favor the right over the left. And in the Beis HaMikdash, there is a pasuk that tells us that they used to go to the right. Whenever they would have to go around something, they would always go to the right first. In a shul, that is the way, it's not relevant for women, but for the men in the sanctuary when carrying the Torah, etc., you're always supposed to move to your right. That's where you're always supposed to go. So you come out if you carry the Torah from the Ark to the Bima, you go to the right all the way around, and then when you're carrying it back, you come around to the right again, back to the Ark. So you're always moving to the right. So it makes sense that you move to the north first, and then once you're there, you of course have to go to the south, because now you got to finish the job, and then come back the other way. So that makes sense.
Weren't lucky
Kohanim
not allowed to serve?
That's a machlokas. No? Yeah, that's a machlokas. Whether that's called a mum or not, whether that's called a blemish. That's a thing. Now, I have several lefty children, so don't. Now, so it's 9:00. I would just tell you that there could be something else at work over here as well. The Torah tells us that when the placement of the, I mentioned this to you when we talked about the directions in the summertime. We talked about the directions of where the placement of the menorah and the shulchan were in the Beis HaMikdash. And here, the shulchan and the menorah should be in the Kodesh, in the sanctuary. That's where they should be. The shulchan is the table that holds the bread, the showbread, the lechem aponim, and the menorah, of course, is the menorah that you light. So the way the Torah describes it is, the Torah says, you should place the shulchan, the table, the way the Torah says it is like this, put the shulchan in the sanctuary. Doesn't tell you where. Just put the shulchan in the sanctuary. Then it says, and then put the menorah on the south side of the sanctuary, opposite the menorah. Opposite the shulchan. And then it says, put the shulchan on the north side. Right? That's where the Torah, it's very convoluted. The Torah says, put the shulchan in the sanctuary. Where? Doesn't tell you. Then it says, put the menorah on the south side facing the shulchan, and put the shulchan on the north side. I could have thought of a more convoluted. Why present it that way? So, one of my Rebbeim and Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Kolevsky, Zechon Rebach of Blessed Memory, used to say that the point the Torah is making is what is the relationship between the shulchan and the menorah. The shulchan represents Parnasa, it represents the success in the physical world, monetary success, materialistic success, and the menorah represents Torah. Ora zu Torah, light is Torah. It represents the study of Torah and the knowledge of Torah. And that the two have to work together. Torah, imein kemach ein Torah, if there's no flour, F-L-O-U-R, there's no Torah. You have to be able to eat in order to have Torah. You have to have, physical needs have to be met in order for Torah to be studied. Imein Torah ein kemach. But if there is no Torah, then there's no kemach, there's no flour. What does that mean? The physical needs, the physical success has no meaning if it is not aligned with Torah. The purpose of the physical material success is so that Torah can be studied and kept properly. So they work together. To have one without the other, neither would survive. Torah without the material success can't survive. We understand that. But the material success without the Torah can't survive either, because it leads a person astray into a realm where he shouldn't be. The Torah is what makes everything work. So the two of them have to work together. So the north side always represents material success. The south side always represents spiritual success, the Torah. So that's why the Torah tells us, put the shulchan in the sanctuary, but it doesn't tell you where to put it. Just because you have to start with some sort of material need. The physical needs have to be met. Think of a baby. You got to start with the way. You don't start by teaching the baby Torah, even though the angel does in utero. But when the baby's born, you start with physical needs. You got to raise the child. That's what you start with. So you got to give the physical needs, put it in the sanctuary. But there's no place, which means it has no specific domain until you put the Torah in the sanctuary on the south side, opposite the shulchan, opposite the physical. Success has to be used now to support the Torah. And now that the Torah has its domain, now you place the shulchan on the north side, now the shulchan has a domain as well. Once you've placed the Torah there to have its domain, the shulchan has its domain. This is, of course, represented, we know, by the two tribes, Yisachar and Zebulun, where Yisachar was the one who studied the Torah, Zebulun was the one who went and was involved in business and trade and supported Yisachar, and that way they were both successful. It could be that idea is being brought out here as well, that the outer courtyard, where you haven't yet gotten to the main show yet, you haven't gotten to the inner courtyard, there, Yechezkel moves to the north first. Because you've got to have, the physical needs have to be met before you can move to the south, where you can then have the spiritual needs. Because if you don't have the physical needs, you can't even begin with the spiritual needs. But once you're going to establish them in the inner courtyard, you got to move in first with the Torah, with the spiritual side, then you come around to the physical side and move it into the inner courtyard as well. It could be the same idea is being reflected, that you begin with the physical side, but it doesn't have its domain yet. You have to start with it, but you can't give it any kind of specific importance. Until you then move around and use it to get the spiritual side off the ground, the spiritual side moves into the inner realm, now you can come back and move the physical side into the inner realm as well. It could be that that's the idea that's being brought up.